Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Vlad Sedler here with my co-host, Booms, Jason Anthony at Booms62, recording on Thursday, February the 20th. Jay, what is going on, my man?
Well, I'm back off the IL. You know, kids getting sick, knocking me in the dirt, but luckily we had the stud, Mr. Mike Mager, pick up the slack and step in for me last week. I need to stop missing episodes because he's going to Wally Pitt me if I keep letting him sneak in. Great episode last week. I really enjoyed it, but excited to talk some middle infielders today with you, my man.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, like middle infielders, I don't know. I just find them intriguing. I think it's my favorite two positions, second base and shortstop, to talk about. And if we were doing this show, say, a decade ago, we would be talking about the barren wasteland that shortstop is, but that has not been the case the last few years. And so lots of value all through the board. We'll talk all about it. Essentially all the second base and shortstop that run through one through around 400 or so ADP. So we'll try to cover those guys today. So spring training is here and we had a game on. It was here on Thursday. The Cubs and the Dodgers. Yamamoto played a little bit. My boy Bobby Miller got, you know, hit in the head by his former teammate Michael Bush with a comebacker. And Gage Workman, Rule 5 pick for the Cubs, hit an oppo bomb. Did you get to see any of the highlights of that game?
And no, but that Bobby Miller one was a little scary. I forget who texted me, but they said, you know, prayers for Bobby Miller. I'm like, what's going on? 105 miles an hour off the forehead. Other than that, it's just beautiful to see baseball back on the TV. Spring training gets a little exhausting for me. You know, you get ready. You have to pick and choose what you take from it, but definitely excited to have it back.
And as far as the Dodgers and a little bit of news, so we're going to now start to have over at FTNFantasy.com our spring training roundup. It is an overview of what's happening in spring training, actionable nuggets that are fantasy relevant for basically each team, just breaking things down by division within each team. And Lucas Beery kicked things off with the first one. Jake Kuchek will handle the other ones during the week. But, you know, one thing about the Dodgers, this is really not news, but they're essentially going with Ohtani leadoff again. That's Freeman and Teoscar Hernandez. So that's what they mentioned there. So really not much there that is new for us.
Can we talk about these Dodgers, Vlad? You know, it makes me upset. You know, that top four, that lineup is just a beast. And then you throw in Max Muncy at five and Will Smith at six. That is a disgustingly good team. You know, I don't know how they're not going to win 110 plus this year. So those Dodgers, good for fantasy at least.
Yes, good for fantasy. By the way, I was on a Dodgers podcast earlier today. It was not a fantasy one, but they had me on as a guest to talk fantasy. So it was cool because I got to, you know, kind of dive in and dig into the team a little bit more in my overall assessment was it's good. It's very good.
Well, make sure to send that to me so I won't listen to it.
Done. Let's talk about an NL Central team, the Cubs. They're making some moves there. You've got a little bit of pain for Michael Bush in the projection there because old man Justin Turner's in the mix. 40-year-old Justin Turner signed an ideal platoon partner for the left-handed hitting Michael Bush. He could play first, he can DH, maybe a little third, maybe screw things up for your boy Matt Shaw, or maybe not. What do you think there?
Well, he's not my boy Matt Shaw, but I think there's value in round 15 of the DC we were talking about offline. But I don't see Justin Turner playing any third base. I think those days have passed for him on the defensive abilities. It definitely throws a wrinkle at Michael Bush. You know, they wanted to DH Seiya Suzuki. Seiya came out and said he didn't want a DH, so I don't know how that impacts things, but Justin Turner's going to get his at-bats. So it's definitely going to tamper, in my opinion, the expectations of Michael Bush, not so much Matt Shaw as far as the third base effect. They can move some people around, but I would say Shaw would be safe unless he just really struggles.
Yeah, I mean, a good camp for Matt Shaw, and he'll pretty much be locked in there. We're looking at a, you know, anywhere 10 to 18 homers, 20 plus steals, definitely in the cards. And yeah, Michael Bush really gets a hit. He was a fantastic bargain going there in the mid 200s. And, you know, now a guy that had potential 25, 30 upside with some, maybe some batting average ding, you're looking at less, you know, you're looking at 500-ish, maybe less at bats for him. So we'll see how that works out. The Angels have a lot of news going on. You've got Mike Trout moving over to right field. I had the Outfield Tears article come out. We can talk about that later. But basically, I'm starting to drink that Kool-Aid a little bit, even though I've been off of it for the longest time. And then, you know, there's a little helium coming in there. Jorge Soler, since it was proclaimed by Ron Washington that he would be in the mix near the top of the lineup with Trout and Taylor Ward. Soler's price has crept up a little bit closer to 200, and he's a great on-base guy as well. And then Kikuchi, Yusei Kikuchi, named the opening day starter for the Angels. And finally, that paid off. The drafting late of Kenley Jansen paid off because he's got himself a job usurping closer of the future Ben Joyce.
Yeah, you know, and at Kinley's cost, where it seems to have settled in end of eight, beginning of nine in draft champions, I'm still interested. I just think there's safety into the length of leash that he has. Ron Washington will not be going away from him as long as he's healthy. So, you know, you're not talking 40 saves, 50 saves. You're not talking elite strikeouts, but there's something to being able to write in 25, 28 saves from your closer one or closer two, depending how you draft it. And, you know, Ron Washington continues to hate on the fantasy darling Luis Rengifo, because when he played last year and led off, he was really good until he got hurt. And so it'll be interesting where he fits into the lineup now, because he's not a cleanup hitter. And I just saw a note today that he might play some center field for them because they don't have a center fielder in that starting lineup unless Joe Adell can swing it. And that might be a stretch. And so you're looking at possibly the ghost of Mickey Moniak playing a lot more than Joe Adell, which is a little shocking for roster construction for fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, Adell and Moniak would actually line up for a decent platoon split there. And then Rengifo, you know, he's not a big walk rate guy. And then, you know, we discussed it before, I think in last week's episode with Mike, is he's not a fast guy. His sprint speed is really average, but Ron Washington let him run wild and he was very effective on the base paths. But of course, you know, the value there comes from him being able to lead off, but he's got a little bit of power. I could see him settling in there. Maybe he could potentially clean up because, you know, Nolan Schenwell is kind of more a contact hitter guy. We'll see how the rest of the lineup shakes out. But there are two other interesting guys that are now on this roster. And listen, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I've been drafting Tim Anderson in the 40s towards the end there with the Angels because I just feel like it's a different environment here. You know, it's not the White Sox, and I don't know. I just see him like smiling a lot. I don't know what that means, what that translates into, but shortstop is so dry. And instead of me having to take a shot on a guy that may not even play in a single at bat in like a, you know, Cole Young from the Mariners or going, you know, the dregs of like a Kevin Newman, I've been drafting Tim Anderson. So maybe nothing, but maybe a little something.
Well, I guess we all have to, you know, do a fantasy pick for the fantasy gods, like a little donation, because I'm pretty sure Jose Ramirez punched all the fantasy goodness out of Tim Anderson when he got laid out, because he has not been the same. And, you know, in the 40s, it's worth a shot, you know, with a little speed, a little batting average, but I don't see that working out. And, you know, the other player you were going to refer to is Yoan Moncada, at third base. And that's a situation I can see actually coming main event draft season. I can see him getting drafted in the top 30 rounds and being on some starting rosters. Still a lot of skill there. Obviously, like you were saying, off the White Sox, there's some, you know, you just get off a bad team onto this, another bad team in the Angels. So it's not like they're changing much, but it will be interesting to see if Moncada can play, because he is going to get a lot of run because Anthony Rendon does not like baseball, and I don't think he'll be playing much in the near future.
No, no, I think he's done. He's not even, they removed his locker and everything. So this is going to sound crazy, but I want to remember, I forget offhand what the, or what the current, you know, win total is, futures bet for the Angels, but I'm willing to go over. And I think so much obviously relies on Mike Trout being the glue and kind of staying healthy, but I really don't hate this team, at least on the offensive side. The one thing they've been good at the last few years is that they hit a lot of home runs, but they've just, you know, a lot of mistakes. The pitching has been bad, but you know, I think there are some bright spots. I think the win total is low enough where it's, you know, something considerable, but there are things that need to happen, like, you know, Kyle Hendricks not being horrendous, Reed Detmers actually bouncing back to the prospect he was, you know, Kikuchi staying healthy, and a couple of those veterans kind of getting a second wind, if you will. So not opposed there for some of these Angels.
Anytime you start with Kyle Hendricks, you know, having to perform, what could go wrong, right? I actually had a question for you, circling back to the Cubs and Matt Shaw. 31 steals in the minors last year, but 11 caught stealing. How do you projecting that to translate to the major leagues and your VDPs?
So I've got him in the mid, you know, the mid teens, I believe, or maybe 18 or so steals with a caught stealing percentage that I believe is pretty close to, or even a little higher than his minor league rate. But it, even that might be a little bullish. It really depends on the, what is it? The, you know, I don't think lineup spot matters as much, because the Cubs are a team that really just kind of usually has a green light. We've seen Pete Curl Armstrong run with abandon near the bottom of the lineup. So I think he'll get ample opportunity to do so, you know, when he gets on base, but I think that's a pretty fair projection, somewhere around 15, 20, just being, you know, 50th percentile.
Yeah. I mean, you start getting caught that much, you start not only getting the yellow light, but the red light. So it'll be interesting, his success rate in the major leagues. I see, you see the 31 steals, like, oh, and then the 11 caught stealing, like, oh. So it's, I'm interested to see how much he's going to get, obviously, if he wins the job and is starting for the Cubs.
By the way, super quick trivia. Do you know who the most caught stealing in baseball the last 2 years is?
No.
It's Bobby Witt Jr.
Well, that's a lot of opportunities, huh?
he does run a lot.
Keep running, Bobby.
Keep running. Yankees, they're obviously bad news with Stanton. Not one, but two tennis elbows. I think it's safe to say, I mean, if there's anyone to cross off a draft list, I think it's probably him.
Yeah, I mean, it's really painful, and it's not getting any better anytime soon. And the interesting thing about the Yankees, the way they're constructed, they do not have a lot of depth. If it's bad, would you be shocked if there was a JD Martinez signing in New York?
No, and that's actually really not a bad idea. Actually, as we're recording, Rowdy Tellez signed a minor league contract with Seattle, which is of no fantasy relevance, because I don't think I'd even draft him 50th round in a pick. But you're right. The depth is horrendous. Their backup catcher right now is Alex Jackson. Their own catcher has an issue, Austin Wells, being delayed in camp. They've got Oswaldo Cabrera in the starting lineup. Trent Grisham is hurting too. He's delayed. DJ LeMahieu is, you know, 37. And yeah, you're right. This team is very much lacking in depth and can use some help. Hey, listen, that's good news for Jason Dominguez. He'll be playing.
There's a long leash here, because he's going to go through some struggles, but man, there's some immense talent and some immense upside there if he can figure it out.
Now let's get to the fun stuff here. As the Casas turns, Tristan Casas mouthing off again about how, I forgot the exact quote. I don't know if you remember. It was about Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell, and Marcelo Meyer, that basically, like, you know, we have the big boys up here. Like, you know, the kids need to like stay in the minors, or, you know, I mean, I'm exaggerating there a little bit, but that's kind of what he said. Like, at some point, bro, when do you just like know what's best for your team to just, you know, just shut your mouth?
Yeah, he's not some cagey old veteran. He's not much older than these guys. So it's kind of interesting that he's kind of talking like that. I think he said, you know, we have some, you know, men here and those boys need to kind of learn the game a little more. And they want Bregman's our second baseman and Devers is third. And, you know, what he said makes sense as far as for roster construction for the team, but he should not be the one saying that. It kind of lines up why you keep hearing rumors about Boston wanting to move him, because there's a lot of talent there, but there seems to be some clubhouse issues with his actions and his words.
Yeah, and doesn't that just it deflates his value even a little more? Like he's now, you know, it gives the Red Sox less leverage because, you know, or maybe I'm overthinking it, but teams are like, okay, well, this guy, listen, he's got like, you know, impressive sort of raw skills and power, but like, do we want to deal with this headache? You know, it's not like, it's a little different than like, you know, Blase Greinke. He's like hitter Greinke, but it's a little bit more like, I don't know. I don't love it as much.
You have to be pretty good for a team to put up with a lot of BS. And he hasn't performed yet. And you, I don't know the drafts you've been in recently, but he's been falling, you know, 10, 20 picks past his ADP. So the fantasy community's taking notes too. And there might be a buying opportunity there. You know, the other really interesting storyline, no pun with Trevor Story being the shortstop there, is Christian Campbell, because they keep talking out of camp that the Red Sox just love this kid. And, you know, them wanting Bregman to play third base and Rafi to DH is speaking more to that, that they want him to make the team out of spring training. But, you know, there might be a buying opportunity for a short time longer until that gets settled out, because if Christian Campbell makes the roster, you know, he's going to fly up the board probably to the, you know, above probably around pick 100, 150. What do you think?
That sounds about right. And exactly. I feel like now is the buying opportunity for that, because to me, the writing is kind of on the wall for this. Right. And then there does come a point where, I mean, do you really think like a full, like, we don't know enough about Christian Campbell. We're going off the, you know, the good vibes and everything. And I mean, people are singing his praises. Like, he's just to the point where we're forgetting that the best prospect in baseball is Roman Anthony on that very team. That's how much attention Campbell's getting. But there becomes a point where, I mean, what are you going to have, like a Wyatt Langford or even Jackson Churio type season from the guy? Probably not. And so if he starts creeping up into that area, I mean, I'm just not interested. And this would only happen, of course, if he is kind of locked in and he gets that job. But I feel like there's a lot that's going to happen in Boston until then. It really does feel like a mess over there. I will say that I am very concerned with Rafael Devers, so much to the point that I reduced his plate appearances down to 580, which almost doesn't make sense, but it just does. That's what I'm doing. That's how I'm setting it. I still have the total team plate appearances the same. We just kind of rejiggered things, but you know, he right now is working off, kind of off the side with, you know, he's got, you know, building up the strength in his shoulders. He's got, you know, the drama. I'm just not feeling it. So I'm not drafting him whatsoever. The only good thing that's happening here, by the way, is Alex Bregman joining the team. And maybe he can kind of help wake Cassis up, because Bregman is apparently like the rookies, like these, you know, these young kids or like the, you know, less known players are raving about him. Like, he's coming up and like asking them about, like, you know, their family and stuff like that. Like, he's just like literally him and Story are like taking over that clubhouse leaders.
Yeah. And I saw Bregman's introductory press conference, and it's basically, I've made the playoffs all 8 years. We have winners here. I'm a winner. These guys are winners. We're going to win. You know, I can't imagine a better clubhouse guy to be in there, you know. And I just, on the flip side with Devers, and then even Marcus Stroman, what is with these guys coming out in the media and just, I'm not going to do that. I'm not a team player. Like, it's changed so much. It feels like, you know, since watching the baseball players grow up, hey, anything the team needs, I'm there. Those are the ones you root for. Rather than these guys, I'm a third baseman, I'm a starter. Well, I guess Devers has a little more of a leg to stand on than Stroman because he's actually a good player. But it's interesting to go through the media with these disgruntled sayings, I guess.
Yeah. It's different because there are other players that say, hey, I'm willing to go and do whatever is necessary for the team. And, you know, some of it is a confidence or, you know, thing, or it's like a bruise to the ego, but you know, that affects the team. It kind of hurts things. And so, yeah, I mean, there's just so much still, I think, to uncover here and for things to happen, because say Christian Campbell does play second base and he gets locked in there and Bregman's at third. Well, where does Devers go is DH. And what do you do with Masataka Yoshida? Or they talked about Devers playing first. Like, you know, who knows what is going to happen there? But there's a trade. There absolutely is a trade that needs to be made. And then there's also the elephant in the room that Roman Anthony is not your average 20, 21-year-old. Like, this dude is mature. He is above the fray of the level he's been playing at. Like, he's major league ready. And you can't say that for a lot of guys his age. And they're going to try to hold him down, but I don't think it's going to be, you're not going to be able to for too long.
Yeah. With that three-headed monster coming up in Boston and Anthony Mayer and Campbell, it's a fun time to be a Red Sox fan, because that's going to be some studs for a long time. I mean, I'm reading about Christian Campbell being a top five prospect by eye test ever, and he's not even the number one prospect on the team. Like, I mean, that's amazing, the skills that Roman Anthony has. And you know, it'll be interesting because there is not an opening in the outfield, not even close, because now they're talking about Yoshida going out there as well. Because Rafaela is an elite center fielder, it'll be really interesting how this shakes out. And I cannot agree with you more. There is a trade coming, and, you know, not just for the Red Sox, for multiple teams around the league. There's going to be some shakeups. And that's one thing I've been a little shocked this offseason is the lack of trades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the way, I was going to ask you, if you do hear from your little cousin Roman about what his playing time might be this year, and if he'll make the team, please let us know.
Yeah, you know, I got to stay in his good graces. So, you know, got to keep the cousin on the gold train. You know, get some tickets, get some money kicked down. You know, the Anthony name keeps on going.
Yes. And then, of course, fantasy baseball author and industry legend Larry Schechter is cousins with he's uncle. He's Alex Bregman's uncle, by the way, for those that didn't know.
I have heard that.
All right. The Houston Astros. This is interesting. They signed our boy Brendan Rodgers, and our boy being the guy that promised us 4 years ago that he was going to steal 20 stolen bases. He said that in spring training, and then he didn't steal a single base that year. And I went back and I looked at his career stolen bases. He's got one in all of his years of baseball, and it came last year. But he's in on a minor league deal with Jose Altuve potentially playing out in the outfield. If that works out, there's an opening there at second base. It could be Rodgers. They've been talking about Mauricio Dubon and using him there. And so it's an interesting roster right now. The starters include guys like Ben Gamel, Chaz McCormick, who I actually think is solid, Jake Myers. And it's a, you know, pretty interesting roster. They also need some depth.
Yeah, this is the worst Astros team that we've seen in the last 9 years. I mean, they're still got a lot of studs, so you know, they'll probably figure it out. But you know, I just get a little chuckle watching or thinking about Jose Altuve in front of the Crawford boxes trying to rob a double with that tall wall behind him. But I have a hard time believing he's going to be in left field. But you know, they're playing out there the first four or five games. So in spring training, they're going to try it out, you know, because the outfield setup with Chaz McCormick, Ben Gamel, Jake Myers is not going to work for the year. So they're going to have to figure that out. I've read about prospect Zach Denenzo, I think his name is, being out in the outfield possibly. Denenzo. And then they have another Jacob Melton. So they do have some prospects coming up, but it will be very interesting how Houston navigates this. And Brendan Rodgers is not exactly, you know, a picture of health and skill. If you couldn't do it in Colorado, but, you know, I guess with his 40 steals, you can't steal 40 unless you steal the first one. So, you know, at least he got that out of the way.
This is true. This is true. And by the way, our model is pretty bullish on Jacob Melton. And we project that he finds himself a role there. Nice, no power really to speak of, but a nice, you know, stolen base guy, defensive player, really good prospect.
My DC teams love that, Vlad. Thank you.
Yes, we like Jacob Melton. Last note is on the Phillies. The word of Trey Turner possibly leading off and Kyle Schwarber moving out of the leadoff spot, possibly hitting behind Bryce Harper. That, of course, impacts Trey Turner in potentially running just a little bit more. And then Schwarber, maybe a little flip in terms of the run and RBI ratio.
That's a really interesting story. It's not like Philadelphia has had a problem on offense. Schwarber's been pretty effective at the top. You know, and it was interesting, the games that Schwarber did not lead off last year, Trey Turner did not take his place. He did not lead off one time last year. So I don't know what exactly they're going to do there, but I don't think it's a guarantee that Turner is the leadoff if Schwarber is not.
Yeah, very possible. And that lineup is, they just always kind of find a way to get it done. I'm excited for Max Kepler. He kind of already looks like he belongs there. So we'll see how that works out for the Phillies. All right. We're going to talk some middle infielder tiers real quick on what we've got going on at FTN. Obviously, the Fantasy Baseball Draft Guide. We've got an announcement we'll have soon, the long-awaited custom rankings tool that will allow you to customize based on any type of roto settings that you would like and any points as well. And it, you know, your setup you can default to your CBS Points League, your ESPN or your Yahoo, and it loads with the FTN projection. So that will be cool. And that is coming out next week. The, you know, projections are still out, the 15 team rankings, which are the top 500. And then we got the gritty, the 12 team grid sheet, spring training reports, got some points and head to head content, got all kinds of stuff. What else we got?
We also got two more great articles come out. One from Mike Mager and the KDS or the KDS mapping, you know, the Kentucky Derby system of kind of prioritizing what draft pick you get. It does matter. And he has a great article on that. And then the percentile targets from Dan Thompson. What are your goals when you're drafting? What are your goals for the year? How many stolen bases? How many homers? How many strikeouts? So these are really valuable. Another couple great articles from FTN out.
Current deal right now, spring 15, that gets you 15% off ftnfantasy.com. All right, middle infielders. Last year, there was a mix of return from the top guys. Just looking at the ADP, it was, you know, looking at the middle infielders that were top 50 drafted overall, most of them were shortstops. It was, you know, Bobby Witt Jr., of course. He was a third overall pick and returned top third overall value. Trey Turner spent a little year hurt. He still earned about $20. Mickey Betts spent some time hurt as well. Ozzie Albies, a complete miss. Francisco and Lindor and Ellie De La Cruz were big hits. And then Gunnar Henderson, of course, he was picked with an ADP of 35 this time last year. And he was the eighth overall player in fantasy last season. And then the one interesting guy that was he was a whiff. And even though he played more games or more plate appearances than anyone, Marcus Semien only earned $15 in 15 teamers on 718 plate appearances. So Gunnar Henderson essentially earned 2.5 times more fantasy value at the same price. And you can look at like the points per game difference. You know, Gunnar Henderson averaged a little over 5 fantasy points per game. Marcus Semien only 3. So that's kind of the overview from last year.
That is so many at bats. And you know, you can see Simeon's age, you know, the decline happening right in front of us. So it'll be interesting what he does this year, because the guy, you can write in 160 games, but a little bit was bad luck last year, but stopped running, contact rate dropped, you know, barrel rate stayed the same, line drive rate dropped. So, you know, he's still going pretty high in ADP, still in the top 6 rounds. It's a tough click for me right now.
Yeah, I think we have him probably like 110, 115, which is essentially is, you know, let somebody else have him. Also, manager quote there about, or maybe it was Chris Young GM quote, but it was something about them managing him a little bit more this year. So he's not going to be the, you know, the massive 700 plus PA guy. And they talked about maybe even not being the leadoff guy. We just don't know who else really is going to be a leadoff guy there, because Evan Carter, I mean, unfortunately, just when it seemed like things were looking good for him, now he's talking about, you know, the back issue, how they're going to manage it all year. You know, he had back surgery. He's been having issues with that for a few years. But his quote was strange. He said it's personal and he didn't really want to talk about it. So it's just kind of, I don't know, I don't not say ominous, but it's just, it doesn't really inspire you to want to draft Evan Carter.
No, no. Anytime you have back injuries and then can't hit left-handed pitching, it's not a great combination.
So as far as the guys that really crushed from the middle infield last season, the guys that were like post 100 ADP, obviously Ketel Marte, he didn't even play a full season. I mean, it was what, less than 600 plate appearances, and with an ADP of around 115, he returned second round value. So it was, you know, 17th overall, based on pretty much any player rater you look at, like over 5 points a game. So he was a stud. Obviously, Willy Adames with the surprise steals and the RBI in Milwaukee. He's now in San Francisco. He returned second round value. And then, of course, Jackson Merrill, who, you know, kind of the Christian Campbell situation that we're looking at this year, perhaps. He also returned second round value. By the time we got to main event season, he was going around 250 overall. And then he had that shortstop eligibility, but he's all outfield now. And then, of course, Zach Nato for the Angels, also ADP around 250, did not play a full season, but he had 600 plate appearances and returned essentially fourth round value.
Yeah, those guys just won you leagues where you drafted them. You know, for every rookie that kills it in the Jackson Merrill, there'll be four more that don't, right? So, you know, it's, you got to take your chances. You got to do the research. And I didn't have any Jackson Merrill, and I suffered because I didn't have any Jackson Merrill. So you don't want to overreact to that. But, you know, there's guys everywhere you can get, rookies or old guys, veterans we'll call them instead of old guys. You don't want to be ageist here on the FTN pod. Yeah, those got just huge value, huge value.
And so the first tier of players that are at shortstop or second base are all shortstop. So you obviously got Bobby Witt, a consensus top two pick in the middle of that first round. Is Ellie De La Cruz and Gunnar Henderson, both shortstops. And then as you get towards the end of the first in 15 teamers or even 12s, it's Mookie Betts and Francisco Lindor. So my first question to you, you're on the clock with pick one. Are you just smashing the Ohtani button, or are you considering Bobby Witt Jr.?
I have actually already taken Bobby Witt one in a 400 DC.
Wow, there it is.
Yeah, I love Ohtani, and he's the best player in baseball, but I am worried about the steals this year with him pitching. I'm worried the amount of games he's going to hit or not hit because he's pitching or has to get ready for the start. He's going to be a monster, but Bobby Witt is going to run when he's on base, like we just talked about. The most caught stealing sure hasn't stopped him, you know, I'm just looking, 27 caught stealings the last 2 years, but that also equals up to 80 stolen bases. So, you know, he just keeps getting better and everything supports it underneath. The K rate is down to 15% last year. Max EV jumped 3 miles an hour. Barrel rate jumped 3%. Hard hit rate jumped 3%. Contact rate went up 2%. Just everything you want to see from a player across the board, he can keeps getting better. I don't know what the sky is. It might be last year's season, but it certainly doesn't seem like the regression monster is coming for him anytime soon.
If there's any one place that could be it, maybe it's the batting average, because he was the AL batting champ and he hit, what, 332 somewhere around there last year. And obviously that's something hard to repeat, but especially in this day and age where it's, you know, it's not the good old days where, you know, Maglio, Ordonez and, like, you know, 12 other guys were all hitting like 325 plus in August, and it's a different world. And so that's really an elite advantage. The way that I see it is, I mean, it's tough. We have those two very close in value, and part of that is because our Ohtani stolen base projection is lower than any place that you will find elsewhere. We have them in the mid-20s. We're not just running regression models, you know, formulas. Like, that's what we think. He's just not going to run very much, and that's what we have, and that drags down his value. Still, listen, it's still value higher than anyone, but there is risk. And just going back to pitching, and everything just went so smoothly and perfectly for him. And maybe it's a little bit of thinking back to how last year's number one pick, Ronald Acuna Jr., that really should have no influence on our decision, but it's in the back of our minds. And Bobby Witt just represents a little bit more like peace, right? Like you kind of sleep better at night. This is a guy, 99 percentile speed, like the power metrics are in the 90 percentile, the defense, just like is everything. It's a total package. So can't really go wrong there.
Yeah, he is so good. And then, you know, you have the next two guys in Ellie De La Cruz and Gunnar Henderson. Which one for you between the two? Very different skill sets. Which one would you take on the clock?
On the clock, and I've got the four. I would just take Ellie because that's the way I feel like I need to draft to make up for a little bit of my own personal weakness within a draft, is where I really hate chasing stolen bases. And I many times, you know, some of my not as good teams in the past have been when I ignored them early on and said, oh, you know what, I'm just going to kind of grab them through the middle rounds, and it changes the construction a little bit. So if I can start off with a bang, and granted, it comes at the expense of batting average. I think the difference between an Ellie and a Gunner, who's much more well-rounded, is could be 30, 40 points in batting average. That isn't always necessarily the best way to start or to go. I think it's a similar discussion like we were just having with Ohtani and Witt, maybe just a little bit, but like Gunner just feels a little bit like kind of more steady. If you're like the risk averse type drafter, maybe Gunner is better for you, but Ellie's also getting better, I think, and, you know, working on trying to strike out less and just, you know, and he's a stud. So I like them both, but I guess it would be Ellie for me.
Interesting. And it's hard to turn down the speed, right? That's the most, you know, we almost have to get 200 steals now to compete in the overall. So to get 50 steals from your first pick, you know, you got 25% knocked out. You know, for me, if I'm on the clock with pick four, I'm probably not taking either. I know this is a middle infield episode, but, you know, I think I would take a Kyle Tucker over both of them. I think Gunner is a little overrated in fantasy. I think last year was probably going to be a peak year as far as his speed. I think there'll be some more, it's hard to say more power, but I think he's going to settle in about a 30-15 guy, which is going to be really valuable. But I think there's some other players I would rather have than Gunner. And then Ellie, you know, anytime you have over a 30% strikeout rate, I just can't do it no matter what the upside is. Contact rates below 68%. I mean, hits the ball hard. But I mean, his last month of the year, man, he struck out more than anybody, I believe. And so, and then the other interesting stat I heard, and I haven't verified it, is that his stolen base attempts per being on base was the highest in the league by far. Like he ran almost every time he was on first base. And if that normalizes at all, you're going to go, he went 67 steals. I mean, Steamer has him for 54 this year. I mean, if you look at 40 steals, what do you look like as far as value for someone with a bad batting average?
Yeah, exactly. So you'd be looking at a guy that maybe doesn't crack the first round. You know, we have 57, a 255 average. And yeah, that's it is definitely a little bullish. We don't have him over 30 homers. We've got him at 27. And I think, you know, our projection kind of checks out, but as far as like a future value, but it isn't really all that different from a lot of those guys in that round. So if you don't want to go the route of like the heavy steals and the risk with the strikeout rates, all those guys like Kyle Tucker, Carroll, I think are all, obviously Jose Ramirez, are all very solid picks. And on Gunner, I mean, I'm with you, man. I mean, like you talk about, you know, more upside and power. I mean, he hit 37 bombs last year.
Pretty good. He was so good last year. I got him first pick of the fourth round in one of my mains, and just was like, just luck.
The only thing, reason we don't have too much regression there is also, you know, Baltimore, you know, the walls changing is going to be good for the, you know, obviously he hits, it's better for the right-handers, obviously, specifically, you know, the Ryan Mountcastles, Jordan Westbergs of the world, you know, Gunnar's a lefty bat, but yeah, I think, you know, low to mid thirties is pretty solid. What about Mookie Betts? How comfortable are you with him? I know he's a Dodger and all, but how do you feel about him? Say you got the, you know, the 13th pick, you're looking at him versus Julio Rodriguez and, I don't know, maybe one of the pitchers.
You know, and you just nailed it with the 13th pick. I think there's a big 13 in drafts and Mookie's at the tail end of it. If I'm sitting there at 13, Mookie's there, it's a snap pick. Just the ultimate picture of consistency. The runs, he's going to get a lot of RBIs and because he's not leading off anymore. He's batting second. Stolen bases aren't going to be a lot, but they'll be enough. Batting average will be good. He's just solid. So yeah, he's an easy snap pick for me at 13. Not a huge target, but a great backup. You know, the only scary part for me is last year's barrel rate did drop to 6%. But my recollection, he did deal with an injury because he only played 116. Mm-hmm. He had a fractured hand in June. And his second half really did fall off, as far as his stats. So, his barrel rate dropped. Yeah. I mean, it was at 6% throughout the year. So I don't know why his barrel rate dropped so significantly last year, but, he still, you know, even with that low barrel rate, put up 19 homers. I think you can, you have him projected for 30 homers, which I would say is pretty bullish, but the previous two seasons being 39, 35 before last year, it's pretty easy to see him getting there again.
Yeah, I think outside of like the runs and the RBI, I think the other three categories are a little bit more difficult because I think there's a wide, you know, range, min max on the average, and then same with the homers and stolen bases. And really, you know, like it is for most of these players, it's going to come down to health. I mean, if you're going to get, you know, no major injuries and you get 140 plus games out of him, you'll get that value back from him. What about the second round? And not the second round, it's the second tier. So these are players going basically an ADP of around, you know, middle second round with Trey Turner, third rounders like Ketel Marte, and then a little bit of a dip into this group of, it's O'Neill Cruz. He's got the two positions of eligibility, short and outfield. You got Corey Seager, no stolen bases. CJ Abrams, lots of stolen bases. And then you get in second base number two and second base number three in Ozzie Albies. And I guess Jose Altuve is going to add outfield eligibility.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a sneaky thing with Mookie as well as the outfield eligibility with shortstop. So, and there's a good chance he'll get second base at some point this year too, just because he plays everywhere. So that value in moving him around is pretty immense. The guy on that list for me is Ketel Marte. If you can guarantee he was going to play 140, 145 games, he's an easy top of the second round pick for me. His underline was just amazing. Barrel rate jumped all the way up to 12%. Heart to hit rate jumped over 10% up to 53% last year. Contact rates elite at 80.7. Chippy steals, one of the best lineups in the league, and he was a big part of that. His second half was just a monster. So big Ketel Marte fan, but there's still a huge injury risk there. And you're not getting the steals that you typically like from that position with him though.
Yeah. I mean, dude, he hit 292. He basically, you know, mid 90s runs and RBI, and he missed like, I don't know, 15-20% of the season. I mean, and yeah, the average exit velocity was among the league's best. It was, you know, it was a 94 miles per hour there. He's something else. I just, you know, let's see how Josh Naylor settles in there. I really do like the top of that Arizona lineup. It's gonna be some good battles there, I think, in the NL West. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, Corey Seager, another guy, no speed. So you got to build very specifically, not getting speed from your shortstop, but having 30 homers, last two seasons and 123 and 119 games, got a sports hernia fixed, in the off season. So if we can get 150 game year out of him, you're looking at just a monster year, runs, RBIs, homers, batting average, at a pretty steep discount for the skill set, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of a changing of the guard where, I mean, obviously a healthy Corey Seager, it can be phenomenal. He's not that old, but he's been doing it for years when he is healthy. But it might slowly start to, you know, be turning into where, you know, Wyatt Langford, I mean, Wyatt Langford is kind of a similar ADP as him. But those two next to each other in the lineup and healthy, I think could be really lethal. And if it's true that Adolis Garcia is going to hit 50 bombs like he wants to with his new approach at the plate and stance, could be a, you know, a great time there in Texas.
What could go wrong, Adolis?
O'Neill Cruz. So this is a guy that after, you know, submitting the projections and everything, like preparing for this article, the deep dive, it was like a wow moment for me, remembering how elite his metrics were and how it didn't materialize into anything more than just, you know, a little bit of a fantasy loss. But you know, he had the league's best bat speed, the new metric that's being measured there at StatCast, like an almost 96 mile per hour, you know, like Ohtani, Judge-esque exit velocity and barrel rate, hard hit rate 55%. There's so much good going on. Like you switch him with Ellie, and you know, and then you're talking about him as a first rounder. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on Daniel Cruz? I have like literally no shares, and I wonder if I should have FOMO or not.
Yeah, I think there's definitely gonna be some FOMO, and you know, obviously spring training, come draft season, when he hits 120 mile an hour line drive off the fence or over the fence, his ADP will probably jump up about 8 to 10 spots. I currently don't have any O'Neill Cruz. Again, goes back to the strikeout rate for me. There's too big of a batting average risk. And at one point, he was getting minorly platooned against left-handed pitching because he did struggle a little bit against lefties. But the stats, the underlying, like you were saying, I mean, max EV at 121. Is that even a real number? It almost looks like a misprint, but the guy hits the ball so hard. Barrel rate, almost 16%. Hard hit rate, 55%, as Vlad alluded to. But again, the contact rate under 70%, 67.3 last year, leads to the high strikeout rate, which leads to the really low floor and batting average. You know, there's a 230 season and there's a 270 season. He does not have the speed that Ellie De La Cruz has, but he's got more power, it feels like. So there will be a massive season sometime in there, and I probably will not have him, though.
Yeah, it's a tough it's a tough click, especially it's a region with a lot of good pitching, and you know, a lot of our personal preferences come into it. You know, you might just be feeling that it's almost like too good for the taking, like coming off a year where he just disappointed and he's just kind of lazily laying right there and just ready to just like snap up that first round value. So it's possible. Pittsburgh offense doesn't, you know, necessarily inspire many of us. In the third tier, these are players with ADP usually between 90 to 150. So in the 15 teamers, that's like, you know, round 7 through 10. There are a lot of names on the multi-position eligibility guys. It's Matt McClain and Jordan Westberg. And then if you go a little later down the line, Xander Bogaerts and Luis Renjifo. If you're looking at the shortstops only, it's Willy Adames, Bo Bichette, Mason Wynn, Anthony Volpe, Ezekiel Tovar, and then a little later down the line, but I've got him in this group, it's Xavier Edwards, who says he's going to steal 60 bases. And then on the second base side only, Marcus Semien and Luis Garcia Jr. So let's talk about this tier, your favorites.
Is that Xavier Edwards versus Brendan Rodgers first to 60?
Yeah, whoever gets there first, it's going to be close.
You know, it's interesting, and I'm going to sound like a homer, but I am into Willy Adames. And I do not expect to what he's going to do last year. You know, his ADP in every draft I'm in is falling down past 110. And I think at that point, it's going to be value. And maybe it's because it's a draft champion roster construction for me. You have a guy that's just going to play every day. He's going to post up the way Buster Posey wants that team to play. I have some good vibes with the Willy Adames and the Matt Chapmans. The guys, I think they're going to run. I don't think that's a one-year thing for Adames with his success rate. But he does have a batting average issue. that he's not going to hit above 250. So there is some flaws there, but in round 7, 8, even 9, sometimes I think it's a huge, huge get for me if I'm able to steal him there. Round 6, no thanks. So, you know, the one that I got to ask you, I don't understand Jordan Westberg's draft cost. Can you have any insight on me on that?
I think it was his, there are a few things here. It's multi-position eligibility. It's a prospect status. It's, you know, the Baltimore AL East. And it is, you know, it was his incredible, like, you know, his power metrics, the Statcast metrics and the gains that he made last year in the time he played until he got hurt. So I think it's a lot of that, but I don't quite understand, like, there are just some time where when he's getting scooped up ahead of, like, you know, Christian Walker or, you know, Josh Naylor. I understand he's third base and not first, but I don't know. I think, like, you know, what do we have him, like, right around cost, maybe a little lower, but it's a hard one for me. Because I don't know where's he really hitting in the lineup. Listen, 25 homers, 10 stolen bases with a decent average. I think it's possible, but yeah, where is he going to hit in that lineup?
And is there even a guarantee he's playing every day? That's the other thing. They have so many capable bodies there. It would be really interesting. He almost feels like this year, Spencer Steer, where he was going 40 picks higher than he was in the main events just because of the multi-position eligibility. So I'll be interested to see if he starts falling come main event season.
And one thing that you were talking about, Willy Adames. So, you know, keep in mind, this is a guy that when drafts first started in October, November, he was going like in the 60s, like end right. of the fourth, fifth. And so now you're dropping into the hundreds. It's like now, you know, you're getting a little value. It's the discount of, oh, boring old San Francisco and you're buying high last year stats, but there's a turns into a time when there's a good price for it. And he's going to be locked in that two hole. He's going to be hitting every single day out of that two hole. It's going to be, you know, Jung-Hoo Lee either in front or behind him, and then Matt Chapman right there driving him in. So it's really not a bad spot. What about Bo Bichette? I know this is something near and dear to your heart, but let's talk a minute about that. And, you know, you're a therapist to me very many times. Maybe I can sort of return the favor here. Let's talk to the people about what it's like to be, like, really invested in a player and kind of feel like, oh, he burned me, never again. How do you approach those type of scenarios?
No comment. Next question. you know, Bo should be value where he's going. Vlad, the guy is a good hitter. But I literally feel like an ex-girlfriend that was scorned. Like, I can't even look at his name. I have not put his name in the queue. It was so bad last year, and I kept waiting for it. And I was so high on him, and I will get burnt this year. I can almost promise you for not having any shares, but there's just some other shortstops I like better.
Yeah, it's a crazy fall from grace. I mean, this is a guy that was a, you know, locked in second rounder, no problem. And then we're like, oh, the sprint speed, the, you know, stolen bases are down a little bit. And then last year's disaster season happened. I mean, negative value. So we'll see if he does bounce back. The two guys that promised they're going to steal some bases this year, you've got, you know, we should have a tracker for that. And obviously it starts with Brendan Rodgers, but Mason Wynn says he's going to steal 30 to 40 in St. Louis. Xavier Edwards, who I think we have for 40, 42, which is a lot, right? He wants to steal 60 bases. So how much of that hype are we buying?
You know, anytime, especially the younger guys want to run more, depends on the team context. You do have two teams in St. Louis and Miami that are, in my opinion, not going to be very good. Those are teams that tend to run a little more. They're a little more freer giving away outs, you know, with the caught stealings. So I can see both of these guys getting the steals. I would probably lean towards Edwards getting there more than Wynn, just with what Edwards did in his short sample size last year. But, you know, your 5 home runs for Edwards is really pushing it for a projection. I mean, that might be next 3 seasons total for home runs for him, but that does not mean he cannot be valuable, because The other thing with Edwards is the hit tool. I don't believe he's hit under 300 at any stop in the minors, including his major league stint last year. The guy has an elite hit tool. It's not a normal rabbit that is just, you know, trying to steal first base, which you can't. So I do believe in Edwards' skills, but it's a very roster-dependent pick because there's no power there.
Yeah, at one point, I'm just looking forward to my DFS stack of Xavier Edwards with Connor Norby, and then utility or DH Matt Mervis at DH in third in the middle of a hot streak, and then Devison De Los Santos. They called him up in May, and he's mashing. Just get those four in a DFS lineup, and you know, win 100K and call it a summer.
That would be a beautiful thing. You know, there is one guy on here I have to say, it makes me very sad to say, I think Anthony Volpe is being completely overdrafted. And you know how much I loved him last year. I had a lot of him. I think the speed's still there, but the plate approach is terrible. I don't think he can be anywhere near the top of that lineup. And if he's batting seventh, eighth, it's going to be pretty ugly.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. That's one of the things I'm doing is after posting this pod, I'm doing a sweep of my offensive projections for the AL over the next couple of days. And that's one thing I noticed is I didn't make enough adjustment for, you know, it's too heavy reliant on Volpe being, spending more time at leadoff than I think he might. And so, yeah, I think the runs are a little high that we have him for. There's some adjustments to be made. So I do think he's a little, over projected at this point. So I'm going to kind of dig into that a little bit. The next tier four, these are guys going, between 150 and 200. A couple of these guys are outside the 200 even. But walk us through some of these players.
My favorite on the list, probably Dansby Swanson. It feels like he's getting really underdrafted for his skill set, and another guy that's just going to play every day towards the middle of an improved Chicago lineup. I think it's 2020 with 80-80. Not the best batting average, but I think the skill set really proves that he shouldn't be going as late as he is. I think he's going around, pick 175. Feels pretty late for a guy with that skill set for me.
Yeah, and he's like a Mike Mager special. I don't know if Mike likes him this year. I know he liked him last year. But Mike's just like really good at like kind of finding those, you know, solid veterans that just, you know, have their 650 plus plate appearance season and just like produce a profit. So that's one of those guys. Maybe Xander Bogaerts can be one of those guys. I think Bogaerts got a little bit left in the tank.
Yeah. Bogaerts, professional hitter, right? I've always been scared since he basically it's a cortisone shot in his wrist every year for a hitter. But there's something weird going on with the Padres. Is there not, Vlad? There's some bad juju feels like going on there with the ownership and even the Pivetta signing. It's a great signing, but they paid him, $4 million just because they're trying to figure out the kids are fighting over the who owns the team, and they're trying to get the valuation correct. And it's got to be hard as a player, kind of going through that with your ownership, you know, not being 100% behind you with that.
Yeah, it's a crazy deal with Pivetta where it's 4 years, $55 million, but like backloaded. So, I mean, you could get screwed out of that. I don't know. But yeah, the vibes, we talked about it with Mike last week. They are a little off with, and unfortunately, that impacted the Fernando Tatis Jr. I mean, you remember when our rankings first came out. I mean, I was very bullish on him, but it's starting to leak into me. Hopefully, whatever the issues are with the front office and ownership and all that stuff doesn't like leak out onto the field, and that's really the concern. Because I mean, look at the talent on that roster. I mean, that pitching staff. It would be just a shame. It wouldn't be a shame to us as, Giants and Dodgers fans, but I mean, it's the sickest rotation ever. You've got three of the top 10 strikeout percentage leaders in baseball from last year in Michael King, Dylan Cease, and Nick Pivetta, and then an awesome offense. It would just be sad to kind of see that thing fall apart.
All right. Would you be shocked to see Dylan Cease on a different team before the year starts?
Not at all.
Not at all. I do think the best value pick in this area is pretty easily Gleyber Torres, though. The amount of plate appearances he's going to get on a much improved Detroit lineup. You're going to be batting second for them out of New York, you know, kind of take that pressure off. I think he's in for a pretty decent year, and, you know, going after pick 200 kind of feels like a free click there as well.
Yeah, I think it's profit. I think what a few things that keep people away is you look at, oh, moving out of Yankee Stadium to this horrendous ballpark, but it really doesn't get any worse than it was for him last year. And I don't, you know, to not consider him at all means that you just think he's done for his career, but he's too young for that and still wants to make money. And he's on a 1-year deal. He's on a prove it deal, and it's a new change of scenery and, you know, good bunch of young guys. So I like it too. I like it. It just doesn't offer. The thing about a guy like him is he doesn't offer like a boost in any one category, but we don't always have to draft or think in that respect.
No, I mean, at some point you just need stats across the board. It doesn't have to be a super boost, right? I mean, we're always looking to win the round, and sometimes just taking the best player really, really matters.
I mean, and this is, you know, this range that we're talking about, 150 to, you know, 220, there are a lot of stolen base guys. I mean, this is a great place to pick a middle infielder with stolen bases. So we talked about, we haven't talked about him, but there's, you know, Andrés Giménez now on Toronto. There's Bryce Terang, who should steal 40 plus if he continues to play. Bryson Stott might get into a little platoon situation. Zach Geloff, who's got Ellie De La Cruz and Matt Wallner type strikeout rate, but 25 upside. And then Sidani Rafaela, I actually have much lower than where he's going. So I haven't been landing on him, but listen, I could be wrong there too.
Guy can't hit, Vlad. You're right. He is not a good hitter. Great defender. Let me ask you a question about stolen bases. I think you've talked about this a little bit, trying to accumulate. How do you build a roster correctly when you draft a middle infielder that doesn't have big steals like a Gleyber Torres? Do you find a struggle trying to get stolen bases in that case?
Not really, because I'm tracking things as I go. And so, and I'm also usually mapping out ahead of time. So I know the pockets of where I'm, you know, reaching for certain things. There could be, you know, outfielders in an earlier range that will balance out maybe, you know, steals I don't get later. And then the other thing I do is if it's a fab league, like after we get out of draft champion season, I'm not always super worried because we can, you know, they're guys that we can still fab during the season. Listen, you know, all these Michael Cianis and Victor Scotts of the world, they're going to be stolen bases available. Of course, we don't want them to be just empty, and we don't want to get, you know, trapped, I think, like some of us did with Victor Scott the second last season. But I think because stolen bases are so plentiful, I'm a little less worried with that category than I am, you know, say batting average, for example.
Yeah, it is the most readily available stat that you can get on the FAB or on the waiver wire. So I would tend to agree with that.
All right, tier five. These are guys going 200 to 250-ish. A lot of guys there, but just like a quick overview of it. You've got Luis Arraez, first and second eligible. You got Mikel Garcia, second and third. He's pretty much a, you know, big stolen base guy. Shortstop-wise is Carlos Correa. Zach Neto will not be ready for opening day, as far as we know. Tyler Fitzgerald of your Giants, who had a little bit of back spasms or back issues, but he seems to be okay. And then other shortstops are Trevor Story, and then the four position eligible Willie Cruz of the Minnesota Twins. And then if you're talking second base, you've got Jonathan India likely leading off in Kansas City, with Colt Keith, second base for the Detroit Tigers, and working out at first base, Brendan Donovan, second and outfield eligible, a good batting average guy, just a nice steady Eddie. Brandon Lowe. I always get my Lowe's and Lowe's confused.
I think it's Lowe.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
No, it's Lowe. You're right, Lowe. Lowe, yeah. It is Lowe.
Yeah, he's not a steady Eddie because he really can't stay healthy, but his Statcast metric, his power is off the charts. I think it'll play well in that park. I'd love to see him stay healthy. It just rarely happens. But, you know, this is a guy I think hit almost 40 home runs. What was it, in 2019 or 2021? So, yeah, lots of options. And then, of course, Jackson Holliday, who we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's a really interesting group of players, and there's going to be some really big pockets of value. You know, Nico Horner really stands out, and his ADP is climbing a little bit, and it's all health related. You know, you're not really worried about sapping power because there really wasn't a lot to start, but, you know, contact speed. My favorite guy in the group, other than Jonathan India, and I agree with your assessment, he's undervalued here, is probably Brandon Lau. The skills he has where he's getting drafted are elite. He does swing and miss a little bit. So, you know, I know I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but when you're talking around pick 250 rather than pick, you know, five, I'm okay with a 70% contact rate. But, you know, when you get upwards of above a 10% barrel rate and above a 45% hard hit rate from second base, you know, if he does stay healthy, or you just ride him until he gets hurt and you drop him. But if you can get off to a hot start with that, and you know, you also have a short right field porch now in Florida where they're going to be playing at Steinbrenner Field.
Yes. I wish I had more. This is always a difficult territory because it's, you know, it's like the kid at the candy store and there's just so much you want. You want a little bit of everything, but you can't. You only get one pick in that round. And so it's going to be a change of mentality when we get out of this sort of multi-draft season. I've got like 15 underdog dingers going on, got like the DCs. I'm starting to get out of that season and now like really getting to the focus. Now we're going to do some 12 team OCs. Then we're going to move back into the 15s and really need to like start focusing and bearing down. Like, who do I really love? I like a lot of these guys, but who are like the guys I'm going to battle with this season?
That's why we do auctions, Vlad. So we get to pick them all.
That's right. Give me all the middle infielders in this tier.
Where are you at on Tyler Fitzgerald? I mean, I know there's a back issue. Hopefully it's not a major thing as a Giants fan, but are you interested at all, or you don't like the swing and miss?
Yeah, I mean, you know me, man. I don't mind a little swing and miss. Honestly, like you just kind of get guys at the right time when things get going. It works out. I think, you know, speed wise is solid. You know, a little bit less confident about where he will end up like power wise. You know, there were some comps to Nolan Jones because he had such an incredible, you know, couple month stretch there that people were like, oh, if he's going to go really high, it's like a total trap. But it's not the same because Nolan Jones was going around pick 70 last year. And, you know, this is 250. It's a whole different game. So he sometimes is available there. Like, I'm sitting there around past his ADP. He's still there. I have a few shares. I really, really don't mind it.
Yeah, he's going to have a long leash with the defense. He's going to play a lot. So, you know, unless he strikes out 40% of the time, he should get to be able to play through the struggles. He's going to run. His sprint speed is elite. There is a lot of swing and miss, and his power metrics are not good. But, you know, the interesting thing about San Francisco and the ballpark, it does not sap right-handed power the way people think. It's usually lefties that really get hurt. So, Fitzgerald probably looking more of a 15-25, in my opinion, if he does play with a iffy batting average, but there's value there with the right draft cost.
Yes, I really, really don't mind it. You know, the one guy I hadn't mentioned that's in this group, and it's somebody that our rankings at FTN has been much lower on because just in DC season, draft and hold, avoiding the guys with injuries, and that was Nico Horner. But the camp news has been a little bit more positive. There's still a chance that he starts the season off with an IL stint. You know, he's somebody that if you're looking for something specific like batting average and stolen bases at that point in the draft, that's somebody that is interesting. Though ADP is getting a little steep. Like, I can't do it at 213. But if he falls a couple rounds, I would consider it. But it also depends on the format and just, you know, does he fit the build for your team?
Yeah. What else we got in this tier, Vlad? Anybody else in here you like?
No, you know, yeah. I mean, I don't end up with a lot of cold Keith, not for any particular reason. I kind of feel like I want to be a sucker for Trevor Story, but I think, the batting average always a little bit of an issue, but he's going to hit in the middle of that lineup. So I don't mind it. Again, just a lot of profit potential, I guess you could say in this tier.
Any concern at all with India moving from Great American Small Park to Kansas City?
No, because you kind of know what you're paying for, and he's not a big home run guy to begin with. But the value or the potential opportunity of being a leadoff guy in Kansas City, in a park where, listen, maybe his batting average can improve a little bit. Maybe he's not a 245 guy. Maybe working ahead of Bobby Witt is a good thing. So no, not too much concern when I really start to dig into it.
Nice. All right, on to tier six.
Yeah, let's kind of throw these guys all in one big lump. It's 250 ADP to about 400. There are a lot of names in this range. Just as a quick overview, obviously Christian Campbell actually starting to creep up a little bit. Jake Cronenworth, the solid but boring veteran. Christopher Morel, the batting average risk, but he's going to play in Tampa. Jose Caballero, who you would probably think that I have through the roof, but last year was last year, and just not projecting the 40 steals this year. And then you've got kind of the specialty players like Hyesung Kim, who I don't want to speak for anyone else at FTN. I am high on him, who I think will play a lot. I think his defense will keep him in the lineup and maybe be a little bit more than just a platoon guy. Jacob Wilson, you're talking about a guy that never hits under 300 when you were talking about Xavier Edwards. That's another one of those guys. But again, not a lot of power, but let's see what that park in Sacramento does for him. Otto Lopez in Miami, lots of stolen bases. Gavin Lux in Cincinnati. Nolan Gorman, big power, but now if Arenado is sticking around, is he going to get those 600 plate appearances that Ollie Marmol promised? I don't know. And the last guy I'll mention around here, Thairo Estrada, who I really don't know what to make of, but the market seems to really like him in Colorado.
Yeah, Thairo was a name that popped out because I don't know what to do with him because he was so bad last year. But, you go to Coors and your BABIP shoots up 40 points and your batting average shoots up with it. So if he can just make contact, he could be a pretty usable, 10-10, 15-15 guy at a really steep discount this year. Because, he was going around 10-11 last year and he did not get it done. Guy I really like in this group is Nick Gonzalez, just a really good hitter. I think as a backup infielder or even a middle infielder, he could be pretty good value. And then all the way at the very bottom, Caleb Durbin was one of the trade chips they got for Devin Williams, him and, Nasty Nestor. He's the new Dustin Pedroia, not a lot of power, but good contact, a lot of speed. And so if he's playing, I think he could be some decent value I've been picking up in draft champions.
Yeah, Caleb Durbin, a stolen base monster. He can find his way on that team. Maybe he usurps Bryce Terang outright. We'll see. But we know Joey Ortiz is going to be playing shortstop. What did I do with my list? Why is it not on my list? That's why, because he's corner now, and then he'll get the shortstop eligibility. But Joey Ortiz will play shortstop for the Brewers. Another guy I want to mention here towards the end is Luis Angel Acuna. It's difficult to project what he's going to, or where he's going to play or what's going to happen, but I just have a feeling, I don't know, Acuna's do Acuna things, and I just think that he's going to find himself a role on this team and be decent and be fantasy valuable.
Yeah, he came up and had more homers in, a month than he did all in AAA. So he got to the big stage and got under the bright lights, and he really produced. So he said it right. Acuna's do Acuna things. So it will be really interesting how they use him, even the super utility if he gets a little more run. you know, I always enjoy saying the name Isaiah Kiner Falafel. I know it's Falefa, but you know, whoever thought the Tommy Pham signing would hurt him as much as it did, because he was penciled in the lead off, I believe, before that signing. Now he's batting ninth, so that really torpedoes his value. And the other guy I really liked coming into the year was Spencer Horwitz, but now with the wrist injury, I'm completely off now.
Yeah, it's hard to draft a guy like that. It's a real shame. But he is practicing, you know, his one-handed swings, and he'll be back at some point, May or June. Actually, before June, if he stays on track, it's supposed to be only 6 to 8 weeks, but we'll see. Either way, that's the good point, is kind of avoid. I think that's a good kind of overview there. You guys have any questions, you can hit us up over at the FTN Fantasy Discord, the different channels there. You want to talk specific NFBC, there's a channel for that. Dynasty, whatever you need. You can also hit us up on X. That is at RotoGut for myself, at Boom62 for Jason. Jason loves DMs. Please flood him with messages and questions in the DMs.
Thanks, Vlad. Your sarcasm does not go unnoticed on this side.
Those are the middle infielders. I think we did a pretty good job covering them. Any other thoughts? Oh, let's end with your expectations for Jordan Lawler.
I cannot believe how much money they paid Geraldo Perdomo. They must really don't think Jordan Lawler is the guy. So very, very low expectations for me.
Yeah, they said he's going to play a lot. They just don't know where. And it sounds like it's going to be the minor. So, I really want to see him be somebody and do a thing, because he is a top prospect. But those Perdomo dollars were really, really scary. That will do it. Jason, any final, like, I know the Lawler thing is supposed to be final, and it is late our time West Coast. But any last thoughts here for everybody?
I just got a little update on my phone, 28 days until Vegas. So the countdown is officially on, Vlad.
Amazing. That's a whole month of February. Cannot wait. 28 days. Here we go. For Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.